On January 19th, 1961, a strong nor'easter buffeted our nation's capital. Temperatures plunged to 20 degrees, 8 inches of snow fell. Washington awoke the next morning to chaos. The storm threatened to disrupt the day's high and historic occasion, the inauguration of John Fitzgerald Kennedy as president. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, D.C. employees, and hundreds of Boy Scouts employed dump trucks, front-end loaders, sanders, plows, and flamethrowers to clear the inaugural route of snow and of the more than 1,400 cars stranded along Pennsylvania Avenue. Only then was the peaceful transfer of power able to proceed as planned. But the snowfall still managed to impede one element of the ceremony. Kennedy had asked the 86-year-old poet Robert Frost to participate as the first ever inaugural poet. Frost accepted and planned to honor JFK's request that he read a poem entitled A Gift Outright from his 1942 Pulitzer Prize-winning collection, A Witness Tree. But arriving in Washington 2 days before the ceremony and caught up in the enthusiastic euphoria, Frost was inspired to create a whole new poem to read as a preface to the one Kennedy had requested. Following the 12-minute invocation by Cardinal Robert Cushing, during which Governor Pat Brown remarked, "If he doesn't stop now, I'm quitting the church," and several more minutes of additional prayers, and after the oath of office was administered to Vice President Lyndon Johnson, Frost came to the podium bearing papers in both hands. Holding them close, he began to read, or to attempt to read. However, the bright sun reflected off the nearby snow made the script on the white paper illegible. He began, stopped, stumbled, tried again. Vice President Johnson, looking over the poet's left shoulder at the glare, proffered his top hat to the bard for shade. Alas, it did not help. As Frost muttered, "I just have to get through this," he resorted at last to a recitation from memory of the poem that Kennedy, after all, had requested. And such was the introduction of poetry at a presidential inauguration. What purpose really did it serve anyway, this, as Frost put it in the poem that he could not read, this summoning of artists to participate in the august occasions of the state? Certainly, Frost's words were not going to make the oath of office more legally binding or endow Kennedy with additional constitutional authority. 32 years later, Bill Clinton followed suit. He beckoned Maya Angelou to be a part of his inauguration. Unlike Frost, she intentionally composed a long, imaginative poem for the occasion, one she entitled On the Pulse of the Morning. And on 3 subsequent times, poets, Miller Williams, father of singer Lucinda Williams, Elizabeth Alexander, and the openly gay Cuban-American Richard Blanco, have each had a prominent role in the installation of presidents into power. Why? What role have artists, poets, in the august occasions of the state. Perhaps in part it is what Alexander proclaimed in her inaugural poem, Praise Song for the Day. We encounter each other in words. Words, she went on to say, words spiny or smooth, whispered or declaimed, words to consider, reconsider. Words like, do you solemnly swear? And like, here on the pulse of this new day. An exacting oath. The kind of words that have the political power to install a new chief executive. And an inspiring turn of phrase. The kind of words that have the emotional power to stoke imaginations and renew hopes. Which words matter? I mean, really matter. Does encountering words that are precise, exact, in the end prove more significant? Or is the encounter with words that are creative, fulsome, to the point of wondrous ambiguity, of greater significance? Doesn't that depend on the situation? Just last weekend, finally away together as a family for the first time all summer, we settled in for the evening at our farmhouse in rural South Carolina. It was cool and quiet, a nice night to be out on the porch. I was unwinding after so many frenetic weeks until, that is, I discovered that we suddenly had no water. The pump to our well had stopped, and I had not the first clue why. A panicked phone call summoned my neighbor, Billy, who descended into the tight quarters of our small well house and within minutes announced that the contacts on our pressure switch were corroded, meaning the switch would need to be replaced. Out in the yard, Billy and I encountered each other in words. He knew precisely what I needed and described it in exacting detail. Early last Sunday morning, I made the long drive to the nearest Lowe's, went to the plumbing department, found the well section, and then purchased a 4060 PSI plastic steel pressure switch, item number 154967, model number PPS4060. You know what I'm talking about. As soon as I was back, Billy made the repair in minutes, and once again, we enjoyed the miracle of clean running water. In my moment of desperation, I didn't want a poem. Believe it or not. I didn't want something inspiring and creative. I wasn't needing an encounter with words that would move me. I wanted precision. I wanted exactitude. The kind of unambiguous language that engineers use to make things work as they should. Happily, that's just what I got. Isn't that also what we need when conducting the business of the nation? When we're transferring power to a new president, aren't we looking there too for an encounter with words that will leave no doubt whatsoever that a sufficiently legal binding oath has been taken? Why then invite the poets? It is difficult, as William Carlos Williams famously admitted, it is difficult to get the news from poems. So what do we get? What has been offered by those inaugural poets on those august occasions of the state. I would contend that each in their own way offered both an ideal and an assessment. A grand vision of who we could be as a nation and an unmistakable admission that we are well short of embodying that vision. I know Elizabeth Alexander recognized, I know there's someplace better down the road. We need to find a place where we are safe. We walk into that which we cannot see. Richard Blanco wrote and spoke of hope, a new constellation waiting for us to map it, waiting for us to name it together. We encounter each other in words. At times, we need words that rise above the prosaic. Words that transcend function and precision and exactitude. Words able to inspire and to judge. To hold up before us who we might be and to enable us to sense clearly the ways that we have fallen short. That's what those poets were doing. Offering an encounter with just those kinds of words. Peter O'Leary, in an analysis of the kinds of words encountered in religion, recognized that it is not possible to think about religious language without thinking about poetry. I could not agree with him more. So much of what we do here is offer an encounter with words. But ours are certain kinds of words. We're not trying for the precision of a pressure switch, the exactitude of a contract, the certainty of engineering, the essentially unambiguous words of science or law or plumbing. If you come here looking for an encounter with words singular in their meaning, denoted definitively in some dictionary, honed to a careful point of precision, you will be variously confused and frustrated, maybe even, as some have been, upset. We encounter each other in words here. But ours are big and bold words, words layered with meaning from many religious traditions, words aiming but always falling short of describing experiences of transcending mystery and wonder, words challenging us with and calling us to the transforming power of love. Words of spiritual and ethical wisdom. Words summoning us to respond to God's love. Words counseling us to heed the guidance of reason. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Freedom is coming. What does that mean? There are 1,000 stories. Understandings, experiences, hopes, dreams, and then 1,000 more. Wait and see what a world there could be if we share, if we care, you and me. We can encounter some version of those words every single time we gather here and never fully exhaust their personal and collective meaning. To engage in the discourse of liberating religion requires, it absolutely requires open ears and open minds and open hearts. We are always, always diminished whenever any insists on a single meaning
for or against a spiritual concept. When I say I pray, and I do make that claim, only if you are willing to listen with imagination will you begin to know what I mean by that claim. When you say you are a pagan, grounded in a belief that the divine takes many forms, goddesses and gods in profusion, only if I am willing to listen with imagination will I begin to know what you mean by that. When we speak of worth and dignity, justice, equity and compassion, spiritual growth, truth and meaning, the right of conscience, world community, or the interdependent web, only if we are willing to encounter those majestic words with imagination and tender curiosity will we ever begin to plumb their depths. The marvelous Palestinian-American poet Naomi Shihab Nye invites us to hear the words under the words. If we're going to listen to and learn from those who are marginalized by injustice, inequity, and discrimination, we will have to hear the words under their words. We cannot assume a defensive posture, determined that our definitions must be honored. Our meanings matter most. Our understandings are supreme. Week in and week out, in and outside of this room, we are holding up a vision of what we could be, of what we should be. Week in and week out, in and outside of this room, we are making ourselves vulnerable to a common vision with the power both to inspire and to judge. Our encounter with words here should call us, as Miller Williams put it, to a land we can never visit. It's not there yet. Our encounter with words here should judge us. Allow us to hear Maya Angelou's charge that your armed struggles for profit have left collars of waste upon my shore, currents of debris upon my breast. Oh, but it is in encounter with just these kinds of words that we are transformed, deepened, sustained, inspired, enabled to face tumultuous times with faith and hope and love. May it be so.